Welcome to the Movie Film Show, featuring the insightful reviews of Mr. Film and Mr. Movie. This week we review Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides and Everything Must Go. And now here are Mr. Movie and Mr. Film.
Hello, I'm Mr. Film.
And I'm Mr. Movie. Well, let's get right to it. Pirates of the Caribbean 4 on Stranger Tides. Mr. Film, roll the trailer.
Captain, I wish to report a mutiny.
I can name fingers and point names.
Perfect.
The fountain. Is that where Jack beheaded?
It is not the destination so much as the journey.
The fountain of youth. What does it require?
A mermaid, Jack.
The overly long 2-hour, 17-minute PG-13 rated movie from Disney, which will be robbing you blind if you see it in 3D, by the way, is exactly the kind of movie I would classify as walkout material. The opening scenes in this are so slow, and the pacing is so bad, and the comic relief elements miss every mark, never mind the fact that the jokes just are stupid, childish, and not funny. Now, I blame director Rob Marshall and editor Dave Brenner for this, though writing team Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio should also be shouldering their fair share of the blame here, too. The writing is terrible. The directing is awful. The action scenes are dull. And A-list cast members like Johnny Depp and Penelope Cruz give only second-rate performances. And what's with all the backstory between Depp's Jack Sparrow and Cruz's Angelica? For goodness sake, we've had 3 movies before this. Do we really have to spend half of the picture talking about their backstory? I mean, if you're just going to go into their backstory, fine, but show it to us. But all this talking and lack of doing is just terrible writing. It feels like they're trying to set up a prequel of sorts, and it's just excruciating. So, Mr. Film, I give Pirates 4 an F. That's only for the first half of the movie. So now let me review the rest of the picture. And this is where the story actually starts to pick up and starts to get interesting. Jeffrey Rush as Barbossa and Ian McShane as Blackbeard raise the bar quite a bit. And I don't think it was them alone, because it feels almost like a completely different crew was working on the picture when they begin to appear on screen. Things start to pick up and we finally get to the point of it all. And the point, by the way, is that all these characters are doing the pirate equivalent of the Great Race. Their aim is to find the Fountain of Youth, and along the way they have to capture a mermaid, extract a tear from her, and find some special drinking cups and use these things to drink from the Fountain of Youth. Oh yes, the cliched Fountain of Youth. But where the movie really starts to get interesting and exciting is when we get into the whole mermaid sequence. Wow, Mr. Film, these mermaids are enchanting and freaky at the same time, and it really is pulled off brilliantly. The whole subplot is where the movie shines. And you know, it got me thinking, Jack Sparrow is a more of a main character in this than the other movies, and I think he's better suited as a supporting role. He works great here in the mermaid subplot in that supporting role capacity. But when it's all about him, the movie just has a hard time finding its course. But I think for fans of the series, I'd have to say go check this out in theaters, but skip the 3D. Even though it was supposedly shot in 3D, there's really no purpose served by the third dimension. And that's not an indictment of 3D. I want to make that clear, Mr. Film, because I think 3D can work. But the medium is not used here, so save the extra $3 to $5 ticket price and opt for the 2D version. So in the final analysis, I'm going to give the mermaid sequence an A-, the second half of the movie as a whole a B+, and if we add that all together with the initial F for the first half, I'm going to give it a total grade of a C+.
All right, Mr. Movie, I'm with you on this. The first film, a half of the film, does feel as if it was just spit out of some sort of bizarre sequel machine.
Yeah.
It's slow, not very interesting, overly complicated, and as you just say, just plain dull. And the jokes are just stupid, and the setup is dumb. It really
feels like a car that's like firing on three cylinders or something. It's just, you know,
I think without any wheels. So it was bad. But as you say, the mermaid sequence is quite good. And anytime Jeffrey Rush or the great Ian McShane, I'm a big fan of his, are on the screen, things really start to get humming along.
Yeah.
Now, I actually love the first film in the series. It's overlong, messy, ridiculous, convoluted, and sort of dumb. But it had such energy that I could forgive it all. Stranger Tides, on the other hand, really just laid there most of the time. It really was the mermaid sequence and one or two other little fight sequences and a couple of fantasy touches that were best. But that was because those had energy and fun and danger that the earlier films had. And Stranger Tides just shows that a dumb script really needs a lot of energy to get over the dumbness of it all. So, you know, this kind of convoluted silliness, you need everybody to be really picking up. And I think you're right. I think it does feel almost like a completely different film once you get to the mermaid stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm with you on the whole Jack Sparrow as a main character and all the talky backstory stuff. Why didn't we get Jack and Angelica at the beginning of the film in some sort of a flashback to set things up? Why did we need all this Spanish great race business? How was Blackbeard magical? What was it? What about his fire-breathing ship? And given the consequences of the Fountain of Youth, which I don't want to give anything away, but there are consequences.
Which I like that aspect of it, by the way. I thought that was a nice touch.
I did like that aspect of it, but it just goes to serve the point. Why would the English want the stupid thing anyway? If you're asking these questions, and I was during or even after the film, then you're in trouble. Now, while there are moments that were really fun and exciting, moments don't make a film. So I'm with you on this. It's a C+ for me as well. I mean, there's just enough here to give it just a passing grade, and that's about all it deserves.
Yeah, yeah. No, definitely, for sure. And you know what's interesting? The audience has clearly opted for 2D. We're reviewing this after the movie came out, and we have right. The box office results. And what's interesting is that while 66% of the locations were in 3D, only 46% of the a little bit over $90 million weekend gross was from 3D tickets.
Interesting.
So, you know, given that 3D tickets are a few bucks more than 2D, I think that says a lot about people's desire to see this in 3D.
Yeah.
Now, when I saw this in 3D, the theater was about half empty. So my guess is that the 2D screens were pretty packed and that the 3Ds were, you know, pretty thin. So that's pretty interesting, I think.
Yeah, I actually saw this in 2D myself, and you know, I thought it was fine. It played well. I didn't feel like I was missing anything. Like there were some obvious jokes or something that would have been served better by the 3D aspect of it. And there are a few other things that just bug me as well. One other point I want to make, you know, we talked about the mermaid subplot, which I thought was really good, and the preacher character.
Yeah.
I thought that he was kind of interesting. There was some interest. Actually, that was about the only interesting. Those two characters are about the only interesting things that they did with them. The rest of it was cartoon,
right?
And Ian McShane, you know, the guy could read the phone book and make it compelling. But there's a whole business, and again, I don't want to give anything away to anybody. But there's a whole aspect to mermaidness, the mermaid, her form and abilities and things like that, which kind of came out of nowhere, that kind of. I don't think it was a big thing, but it kind of bugged me a little bit. And it just kind of goes back to what you were talking about with the script and how that there's just some really messy, weak writing going on here. So
yeah.
So it's sure. Unfortunate because they you know, we need fun films like this. Don't get me wrong. I like, you know, I gave Battle Los Angeles earlier this year. I gave that a pretty good grade. It was a long, stupid, goofy, loud, dumb action flick. We need dumb action flicks, but we
please
need good
no.
dumb action
please
flicks.
No.
And there are good ones out there.
Fast Five maybe was good.
Fast Five, and yeah, I would actually, and I'm not going to, but I would actually change my grade for Fast Five after seeing this flick in comparison. So I would say if you have a choice between seeing this and Fast Five, go see Fast Five. It's a shorter film, and it actually makes slightly more sense. But that's how it goes.
I do have one last point to make about the 3D, and that's that I think Hollywood and audiences too really are kind of learning like where 3D works and where it doesn't. You know, obviously with Avatar, the biggest grossing movie of all time now, passing Titanic, that made a bunch of money. And I actually think, you know, artistically, it worked well in How to Train Your Dragon and some other animated pictures. So, you know, I'm kind of curious to see how Kung Fu Panda will fare next weekend with its 3D release and if audiences will opt for that. And, you know, I think we can talk about that further on the next show when we review Kung Fu Panda 2.
Yeah, I think so. I think that'll be an interesting point because I know you have some interesting takes on animation 3D, which I think will be interesting to talk about with that film.
All right. What's our next picture, Mr. Phil?
Our next picture is Everything Must Go, starring Will Ferrell. And in this picture, Will Ferrell's Nick Halsey is having a really, really bad week.
I got fired from my job, and my wife left me.
If I'm honest, I saw this coming a mile away.
Thanks for warning me.
I've gotten some complaints about someone living on their lawn.
This is my corner. I'm not leaving my stuff.
City of Arcadia allows the property owner to hold a yard sale for no more than 5 consecutive days. This buys you 3 days.
I was thinking you might want to come work for me. You stay here, maybe sell a couple things.
What are you offering?
I'll give you bathroom and cigarette breaks as required by state law.
I don't smoke.
Good. Great.
Standing at the door of self-discovery.
You know, you can't live like this.
Why not?
It's not normal.
Once you get rid of all that stuff, you're going to feel great.
All right, as we heard from the trailer, Nick has lost his job, his wife has left him, and all of his stuff is on his front lawn. And he's locked out of his house, of course. An alcoholic, he's started drinking again to cope. The only thing he can do is reassess his life and his emotional baggage, symbolized by all of his stuff. Mr. Movie, last show we reviewed The Beaver, which had some very similar elements as Everything Must Go. A guy with some major problems in crisis who uses an emotional crutch, and that film was a beaver puppet, to deal with the world. But that's where the similarities end. This is a great, great film. From first-time writer-director Dan Rush and based on a Raymond Carver short story. And while the script and direction is just spot on, fearless, funny, dark, and unblinking, this is Will Ferrell's film. He's just great here, using all of the comic timing and tapping into a maturity and darkness that is sad and funny at the same time. What I love about his performance is that he's pathetic and a mess and at the end of his rope. But you really don't feel sorry for him in a sort of obvious way. You sympathize with him, but you don't feel sorry for him. This was a guy who people like, who has friends, who is good at his job, but he has a really terrible flaw that is destroying his life. It would have been easy for Ferrell to just be manic and have all sorts of meltdowns, but he doesn't. And when he does, they're quiet and sometimes mean and sometimes sad. Rush's script is really a meditation on how we build walls around us with all our houses and our stuff that hides who we really are. And I think it really works here on every level. Ferrell's transformation throughout the film isn't easy or obvious. The end of the film is really the end of the beginning of Nick's story, and it's perfect. There's just the right note of hopefulness in the film without being saccharine. This isn't to say that there aren't bright, funny moments. Nick's relationship with his neighbor, Kenny, played by Christopher Jordan Wallace, is touching and a little funny. The surrogate parent relationship he creates with the young outsider is a big part of his healing process. Again, there are no light bulb moments. It's just a series of moments that serve to make Nick that much better. Nick's relationship with his across-the-street neighbor, Samantha, who has just moved into the neighborhood, is more complicated. Another surrogate relationship, this one standing in for his estranged, never-seen wife, Catherine. At 90 minutes, the R-rated film from Roadside Attractions is just the right length, and while not everything is wrapped up in a nice bow, I found Everything Must Go strangely a feel-good flick for me. So, Mr. Movie, I'm giving Everything Must Go the first A of the summer.
All right, great, great. Yeah, I'm pretty with you on this for most of the way, and you're definitely right about Will Ferrell in this. He's very good. It's a good mix of a serious role, and you know, he brings that sort of Will Ferrell comic aspect to it as well. And I think it works here. It's a little unnerving at times. It's an aspect of his comedy that I actually don't like that much. You know, if you go back to Saturday Night Live or some of his other comedies, have that same problem where it's just kind of a little bit too unnerving kind of comedy. And in this, that aspect of it, I think actually works to his advantage. You know, there's some good issues that are dealt with here, and alcoholism, which is really interesting and dealt with well, and some good themes of redemption. You know, you mentioned the beaver. There was absolutely no redemption in that. You know, the theme of that was to just go find a depression buddy and hang out with him. And here we actually see a journey. You know, we actually see him on this journey with this kid, with, you know, the next door neighbors, one of them played by Rebecca Hall, who is really excellent as well in a supporting role. And they come across some conflict at a certain point that's really interesting. And it's really hard, I think, with a movie that has these kinds of themes to really latch on to the main character and really like him. And, you know, he's not really a very likable guy on the surface when you look at it. But because of the people around him, especially the kid and the next door neighbor, we care about them a lot. And since they're tied to him in some way, you know, that's kind of how we gain our interest in him and his value, and is actually his kind of journey to redemption. So I think that works really well. So I'm with you on this. I can't give it an A, though. I thought I was a little bit slow at times.
Okay.
But I'm going to go with B+, and you know, recommend. Definitely go check this out. It's worth a watch.
Yeah, and I think so. I think, and again, you know, if you're looking for a redemptive sort of movie or film, you're looking for a redemptive film, I think this is the flick to go see. Obviously, no one's going to see The Beaver for good reason. It's a terrible, a terrible flick, a very well made terrible flick. And everyone, I think, will be a little confused why we gave it such a high grade, considering it's a pretty bad film. It's just so well made. It's one of those rare, really well made bad films. But I want to talk about this, that it's just – what I liked about it is that there is – the writing here, this kind of goes completely flip side of what we saw in Pirates. The writing here is just so good. There's just a couple of scenes that are just terrific. There's a scene with Laura Dern, who plays an old high school friend of Nick's, that's just really, really great. And there's a little particularly how it ends. It's a great thing. And the scene with the Rebecca Hall character Samantha when they're sitting around the koi pond, and there's a great thing that happens there. It's a little disturbing, a little dark, but it's a great scene. It's just so. I just love the writing in this film so much. I like the acting. I like the kid. The kid is terrific. That kid is really good. I mean, it's just a great, not a typical movie kid, just an ordinary kid in the neighborhood who kind of their paths cross. They have this little adventure, and that's the thing about it. And I really, really like this film. I like what Ferrell does with it. I like the fact that this is a guy who – Root is a really likable guy. But he has, you know, he's an alcoholic, so he does these really unlikable things because of it. And I think that it was dealt in a very the alcoholism was dealt with in a very mature sort of way. I mean, there are no easy answers. I like where it ends. It would have been just so easy to flash forward 6 months and his life is all hunky dory or whatever. I like that it ends the beginning of his really what his real story is going to be, and I like that part about it. So this is a real winner. I hope more people see. I have a feeling a lot of people aren't going to go see this, which is too bad because I think that Will Ferrell, you know, he's a funny guy. He does some interesting things. He's done some interesting comic films, but my two favorite films now of his are for non-comic roles. So. If you're looking for a mature, interesting, and hopeful, ultimately hopeful film, this is the one to go see.
Definitely, for sure. I agree with that completely. So, all right.
All right.
Well, that's all we have for this show, Mr. Film.
All right.
Next show we're going to take a look at, as we mentioned, Kung Fu Panda 2.
All right. Hi-ya.
Oh, yeah. And then, let's see what else. We're going to see Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris. That should be interesting. If you want to visit our website, just go to www.moviefilmshow.com. You can like us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/moviefilmshow. We just passed 1,000 followers, fans, and whatnot, Mr. Film, so that's cool.
All right. Thank you all.
All right. And if you have a comment or question, just call our 24-hour comment line at 818-581-5800. 2010. And that's it for now, Mr. Film. I'll see you next show.
See you next show, Mr. Movie.
Oh, frickin' A, I forgot to say the phone number.
Arrgh! We'll put it in afterwards.
Okay, here, I'll have to patch it in. What is the phone number?
818-something.
All right, that'll work. Cool.
All right.
What's the other Will Ferrell movie?
The Stranger Than Fiction, which I know you hated.
I didn't. No, that's the one where he's the IRS agent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I didn't love it, but I liked it.
Okay, I love that movie.
Yeah.
I loved it. I actually like the Dustin Hoffman character in that. He said, oh, you didn't die, huh? Ruin the book. I just thought that's great. So, oh well.
I like that kind of humor, though. I mean, the trailer for that made it look like a really, really good movie.
Yeah.
Skip the 3D.